Welcome to NTD News Today. Here are today's top stories. China today announced an 84% tit-for-tat tariff on all goods imported from the United States. That says the 104% U.S. tariffs on China kick in. We have comments from Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent. The European Union is set to impose countermeasures against new tariffs announced by President Trump recently. How the tariffs by the European bloc will work. President Trump urged Republicans to back the Senate's budget proposal amid signs of opposition to the resolution in the lower chamber and what the Democrats are saying. The U.S. and Iran will soon have talks on a possible nuclear deal. Meanwhile, Israel's prime minister shares key details of his meeting with President Trump. Secretary of Defense Pete Hegseth sounds the alarm on China's presence in the Western Hemisphere. One major threat, influence over the vital Panama Canal. Western intelligence agencies warn China is using malicious apps to covertly gather information from minority and civil society groups. The apps gather data dubbed certainly of value to China.
This is NTD News Today, live from our global headquarters in New York City.
Today is Wednesday, April 9th. I'm Stephanie Eckox. China is hitting back with increased tariffs on all goods imported from the U.S. That's hours after the United States' 104% tariff on China took effect overnight. China's finance minister says the new tariffs effective tomorrow will now be 84%, up from 34% as previously announced. Beijing also imposed restrictions on 18 U.S. companies, mostly in defense-related industries, adding to the 60 or so American firms punished over the trade tensions. Secretary of Treasury Scott Bessent commented on Fox Business. He said, quote, "It's unfortunate that the Chinese actually don't want to come and negotiate because they're the worst offenders in the international trading system." Bessent said allies wanted to discuss how to rebalance China's trade policies in talks with U.S. officials. He did not rule out removing Chinese stocks from U.S. exchanges, saying that all options were on the table. Today, the Chinese yuan fell against the U.S. dollar, reaching its lowest since 2007. Both Bessent and President Trump warned Beijing against devaluing its currency in response to the new tariffs.
It was announced that China is reducing its currency. Did you see that? Big, big. They're manipulating their currency today as an offset against the tariffs. You're not supposed to do that. The game isn't supposed to be played that way. It makes it very hard for us. But in the end, it's not good because they have to buy oil. See, we don't need oil. We don't need oil and gas. We have more than any other country. They have to buy it. That's where it hurts them when they do that. It costs them twice as much.
The Peterson Institute for International Economics says duties on Chinese goods before the 104% boost averaged roughly 21%. That means now the total average tariff on a Chinese import effectively is about 125%. Meanwhile, Trump also announced he would introduce tariffs on pharmaceuticals. The S&P 500 today inched slightly higher after opening, up less than 1%. The Nasdaq Composite climbed more than 1%, while the Dow Jones gained less than 100 points. The administration also raised tariffs on low-dollar shipments from China after previously closing the so-called de minimis exemption. It allowed Chinese retailers like Temu and Shein to ship goods to the U.S. duty-free. The administration announced yesterday a tariff increase on small parcels from China that'll now be 90% of their value, or $75, with a future hike to $150. That's up from the previous plan of 30% or $25. The order applies to packages valued at under $800 and takes effect on May 2nd. The European Union is set to respond to new tariffs recently announced by President Trump. The European Commission says it secured backing from EU countries to press ahead with an initial round of countermeasures. The EU faces 25% import tariffs on steel, aluminum, and cars. This also includes new broader tariffs of 20% for almost all other goods. The European Union is set to impose extra duties of 25% on a range of U.S. imports in response. Those include motorcycles, poultry, fruit, wood, clothing, and dental floss. They're set to enter force in stages, first next week, then in May, and finally in December. The EU Commission said the countermeasures can be lifted at any time should a fair and balanced negotiation solution be found. The bloc is still assessing how to respond to the automobile tariffs and broader levies. New tariffs on imports from dozens of other countries are also in effect as of today. They're part of a campaign promise from President Trump to increase domestic manufacturing and level the playing field on trade. President Trump issued a tax ultimatum to Taiwan's chip-making giant TSMC, as Washington says nearly 70 countries have reached out to negotiate. Here's more on that update.
Taiwan responded with an offer of zero tariffs and more investment in the U.S. Taiwan's President Lai Ching-te said Taiwan has no plans to impose retaliatory tariffs.
To address the reciprocal tariffs by the U.S., Taiwan has no plans to adopt retaliatory tariffs. There will be no change in corporate investment commitments to the U.S. as long as they are consistent with national interests.
President Trump, meanwhile, says he told the Taiwan semiconductor manufacturing company it would pay a huge tax if it didn't build its plants in the United States.
TSMC, I gave them no money. Great company. Most powerful in the world, biggest chip company in the world. They're spending $200 billion in Arizona building one of the biggest plants in the world. And that's without money. All I did is say, if you don't build your plant here, you're going to pay a big tax, 25, maybe 50, maybe 75, maybe 100%.
Japan, meanwhile, says trade negotiations with the United States could include discussions on foreign exchange rates. This comes as the Japanese yen continues to rise in response to a falling dollar rate. Finance Minister Katsunobu Kato said Wednesday there have been various discussions, but no specifics yet. Kato is expected to visit Washington later this month when G20 finance leaders gather on the sidelines of the International Monetary Fund's spring meetings. South Korea Wednesday announced emergency support measures for its auto sector in response to U.S. tariffs. To help prevent any liquidity issues, the government will raise policy financing support for automakers to 15 trillion won. That's over 10 billion U.S. dollars. The government will also lower taxes on automobile purchases and raise electric vehicle subsidies. On Tuesday, Trump spoke at the National Republic Congressional Committee dinner, where he promoted his global tariff increases.
It's going to be legendary. You watch. Legendary in a positive way. I'm proud to be the president for the workers, not the outsourcers. The president who stands up for Main Street, not Wall Street, who protects the middle class, not the political class, and who defends America, not trade cheaters all over the globe.
Trump said earlier that his team is working on tailored deals that eventually could lower some of those tariffs.
Italy's Prime Minister Giorgia Meloni will meet President Trump next Thursday to discuss the EU import tariffs. The EU faces 25% tariffs on steel, aluminum, and cars, as we heard earlier, and 20% tariffs on almost all other goods beginning today. Meloni told Italian business leaders that she supported an offer made by the European Commission to introduce a zero-for-zero tariff deal to avert a trade war with the United States. Italy's import-driven industry ran over $43 billion in trade surplus with the U.S. last year. That's the third largest in the European Union. And Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent says new tariffs that President Trump announced are a ceiling. This means if a nation doesn't retaliate, the tariffs won't rise anymore. Bessent also addressed concerns that tariffs might cause a recession in the U.S.
What will keep us from having a recession is making sure that the tax bill doesn't expire, adding back 100% depreciation, and then adding some of President Trump's agenda, no tax on tips, no tax on Social Security, no tax on overtime, and making, when I bought my first car, I'm 62, when I bought my first car, auto loans were tax deductible. So we're going to do that again for American-made cars.
Bessent said the administration is already having constructive negotiations with the leaders of Japan and South Korea, and that his talks lined up with about 70 other nations. That's to discuss the new reality of trade after the U.S. imposed the tariffs. Bessent said the biggest offender in the global trading system is China, adding it's the only country that escalated the situation amid the new tariffs. Bessent is calling on its allies to take the side of the U.S. and confront China's initiatives as a group. House Speaker Mike Johnson is under pressure to deliver a legislative win for President Donald Trump. The House is in session for only a few more days before it adjourns for a 2-week break. The The president wants the chamber to pass a massive budget deal that will make permanent tax cuts he approved during his first term. The budget blueprint also provides money for border security, along with major spending cuts, but not all House Republicans are on board yet with the Senate's proposed measure.
I think right now, in some ways, we're speaking slightly different languages because the House and the Senate operate in such different ways. But at the end of the day, what this does is it unlocks budget reconciliation and unleashes all the things that we want to accomplish on behalf of the American people. And that can only happen when the House and the Senate pass the same budget resolution.
House Budget Committee Chairman Jody Arring condemned the Senate resolution in a statement, calling it unserious and disappointing. Others have concerns about a provision in the Senate instructions that would raise the debt ceiling by $5 trillion. Trump also spoke with House Speaker Mike Johnson and several conservative lawmakers at the White House yesterday. Trump wrote on Truth Social that the meeting was very good. Johnson told the Epoch Times the meeting was very productive, but didn't provide further details. While Johnson met Monday with members of the House Freedom Caucus, he has threatened to keep members in Washington through the weekend if they can't come up with a budget plan. Meantime, House Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries and Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer say the Republican caucus is divided.
They're busy fighting with each other. The House Republicans are fighting amongst each other. The Senate Republicans are fighting amongst each other. And the two houses. I've never quite seen anything like this. The Republican leader of the House and the Republican leader of the Senate are at loggerheads. And why is that? Because they're defending such unpopular programs.
We are unified in our opposition to the Republican effort to enact the largest Medicaid cut in American history. That's a disgrace. And it will hurt people all across the country. We are unified in our effort to protect and strengthen Social Security. It's not an entitlement program, it's an earned benefit. And Senate Democrats and House Democrats will continue to stand together in defense of Social Security.
Up ahead, a new report by the Heritage Foundation says the U.S. defense industrial base must be revitalized if America is to rebuild the U.S. military and deter communist China. We'll have one of the authors on to break it down. The acting commissioner of the International Revenue Service resigns. Her departure follows an agreement between the IRS and the Department of Homeland Security. The Department of Justice opens an investigation into sky-high egg prices. The nation's largest producer says it's cooperating. Welcome back. During World War II and throughout the Cold War, America's defense industrial base was known as the Arsenal of Democracy. In the years from 1942 to 1945, producing roughly 50,000 Sherman tanks, 300,000 planes, and 17 aircraft carriers. In a time of rising international tensions with multiple national foes, today, critics warn that a major regional conflict, such as a war with China and the Taiwan Strait, could drain the U.S.'s Department of Defense's stockpiles. But a recent report by the Heritage Foundation outlines a strategy to revitalize the defense industrial base. Joining us today is one of the report's authors, Madison Marino-Dawn, a policy analyst at the Center for Education Policy with the Heritage Foundation. Good to have you with us today.
Thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
Now, your report, published on Tuesday, says policymakers, the Department of Defense and industry must revitalize the defense industrial base or risk irreparable damage to America's national security. Just to start with, how big is this risk in your view?
Yeah, well, I think it's exactly what you said. The defense industrial base, it represents a vast network of resources that supplies the Department of Defense with essential defense-related materials, products, and services. And like you described earlier, it's just not where it needs to be in order to compete with China in this increasingly complex and sometimes hostile global environment. So in order to improve the defense industrial base, changes need to be made in many sectors, including education, which is what I can talk more about too.
Absolutely. And I want to dig into each aspect of this, or as many as we can get to in the time we have. Your particular contribution here was focusing on education in relation to this. And of course, there were many other recommendations around modernization and training. But let's look at the widely recognized fact that young people in the U.S. are behind on key educational markers. What is at issue here as you see it in terms of our national security, and just what's the risk in terms of education?
Yeah, well, I think the problem is that, you know, oftentimes for far too long, federal policy has placed greater emphasis on creating or on four-year college degrees than it has placed on obtaining vocational skills and trades. So what we would like to see through changes made in the education policy realm is we would like to see things like related to decoupling federal funding from accreditation, expanding 529 plans, so these are college savings plans, and Pell Grants to support career-ready pathways. We would also like to see revive and expand industry-recognized apprenticeship programs, so IRAPs, and then also modernizing the skill bridge programs to better transition veterans into the workforce. So through a variety of these programs, we can empower families, individuals, we can empower individuals and families with more options when it comes to their education.
Let's start with decoupling federal financing from higher education accreditation. How do you see that helping?
Yeah, so currently the federal government has this monopoly on higher education accreditation, which we would say stifles innovation and locks students into expensive, outdated degree paths. So what a solution would be was that federal lawmakers would adjust the Higher Education Act to separate accreditation from federal funding, removing the requirement for colleges to be accredited by this government-sanctioned system. So instead, they would be able to basically adopt policies that would create new pathways for new accreditors and would also grant states the flexibility to designate new accreditors, which would be tailored to specific industries and require all accreditors to establish outcome standards for student achievement. So doing this would help students and also reduce the government's monopoly on this accreditation, this outdated system.
Okay, another recommendation is reviving industry-recognized apprenticeships. You mentioned that earlier. It seems like a direct link there. You can get people into roles that could directly help with national security, but what in the specifics are you looking at?
Yeah, so what we're looking at is that, so IRAPs were actually created under the first Trump administration, and then unfortunately they were scrapped by the Biden administration, we think because of the control on unions and the influence there. But basically, under the Trump administration, more than 130 IRAPs were created, primarily in professions with significant worker shortages. So IRAPs, what they do is they're designed to align more precisely with industry needs, including greater employer involvement in a simpler pathway to the creation of new apprenticeship programs. So Congress can enact bills like the Apprenticeship Freedom Act or the Training America's Workforce Act that would revive these old IRAP models so that the Department of Labor approved entities like trade associations and educational institutions can recognize and oversee these apprenticeship programs. And also, just one other thing to note, it will give workers practical paid training while filling urgent gaps in sectors like defense manufacturing.
Noted. Now, student loans, let's look into that. They've, of course, been in the spotlight in recent weeks and in recent years even, but you're saying that expanding 529 plan and Pell Grant eligibility could help our national security. Talk me through that.
Yes, absolutely. So currently, 529 plans, so these are our college savings plans, they could be used towards, you know, two-year technical college or four-year degree pathways. But students are not able to use it for some of these non-traditional paths, like funding post-secondary certificates and apprenticeship programs. So through a policy like the American Workforce Empowerment Act, which I think was introduced last Congress, hopefully it'll be reintroduced this Congress, it would basically permit these 529 savings accounts to be used for non-degree technical training, certification, and apprenticeship programs. This would support more career and technical options, whether through these vocational trades, technical options, or technology training programs.
Now, this is an urgent time for the nation and for the world as a whole, with so many tensions and conflicts teetering on the edge of expansion. What's giving you hope at this time?
Yeah, so I think it's, you know, America's effort and also the Trump administration's effort to really to look to see, you know, what we can do in order to revitalize the defense industrial base, but also just restore American prosperity. We can see, you know, with their efforts to start winding down the federal Department of Education, just means that basically more Americans will have more choices. And he's focusing on, you know, affordability and all the things that Americans need in order to be prosperous.
And just in the last 30 seconds or 20 seconds, say, what can folks out there who may be concerned about the issues you've outlined do to help?
Yeah, so absolutely. So I would encourage you to reach out to your congressmen and women and tell them, you know, how important it is to revitalize the defense industrial base and supporting some of the bills that we've mentioned before, expanding 529 programs, restoring Pell Grant eligibility, all these things. So I would just encourage them to reach out to Congress and let them know what the issues are.
Democracy in Action. Thank you so much, Madison Marino-Doan, policy analyst at the Center for Education Policy with the Heritage Foundation. Good to speak with you.
Yeah, thank you for being here. Thank you.
Next, more than $1 billion in federal funding for Cornell University and around $790 million for Northwestern University has been frozen. That's as the government investigates alleged civil rights violations at the schools. The White House confirmed the funding pause late last night. The administration had previously cut off money to schools including Columbia University and the University of Pennsylvania. It's related to various issues like diversity, equity, and inclusion programs and handling of protests against the war in Gaza. Cornell has received more than 75 stop work orders from the Defense Department for various research projects. Last week, the Department of Education said it will cut $9 billion from Harvard unless it cut its DEI programs and banned masks at campus protests. An immigration judge in Louisiana will determine later this week whether or not the government can continue to detain Mahmoud Khalil. The Columbia University student is facing deportation for his role in pro-Palestinian protests. Khalil spoke very little during yesterday's hearing. Here are the details.
You're going to have to come with us. Come on.
An immigration judge on Tuesday gave the U.S. government one day to show evidence for deporting Columbia University student Mahmoud Khalil, who was arrested in New York a month ago and then transferred to a rural Louisiana jail.
Release Mahmoud Khalil now!
The case has become a flashpoint for President Donald Trump's pledge to deport some non-U.S. citizens who took part in protests against Israel's military campaign in Gaza. The U.S. government has said the pro-Palestinian demonstrator should be forced out from the country because he withheld information from his application for a green card, which he has denied. Khalil, a Palestinian born in a refugee camp in Syria, has called himself a political prisoner. His lawyers have said that he was targeted in retaliation for his role in advocating for Palestinian rights, meaning the arrest violated free speech protections under the U.S. Constitution's First Amendment. Department of Homeland Security lawyer said they would provide the evidence by the Wednesday afternoon deadline set by the immigration judge Jamie Comins. In a statement later, Khalil's attorney said he was concerned the judge would rule without giving the defense time to respond to the government's case. If the government's deportation case is terminated at the next hearing scheduled for Friday afternoon, Khalil is free under immigration law. The government cannot challenge the termination. But if Comins terminates the case without prejudice, it can attempt to file the removal case again. If Comins rules that Khalil can be deported, he would then be able to ask her to rule on whether he is eligible for relief from removal, which can be granted in limited cases. Khalil can also appeal her rulings.
The U.S. Immigration and Citizenship Services announced today that it will begin reviewing immigrant social media for anti-Semitic activity, also called hatred toward Jewish people. The announcement, which complies with President Trump's executive orders to combat anti-Semitism, will immediately affect immigrants applying for lawful permanent resident status, as well as foreign students and immigrants associated with educational institutions linked to anti-Semitic activity. In a statement issued this morning, the DHS said it will protect the homeland from extremists and terrorist aliens, including those who support anti-Semitic terrorism, violent anti-Semitic ideologies, and anti-Semitic terrorist organizations such as Hamas, Palestinian Islamic Jihad, Hezbollah, or the Houthis. The acting commissioner of the IRS is leaving the agency. Her departure came hours after the IRS reached an agreement with Homeland Security to share data on illegal immigrants. Acting Commissioner Melanie Krause joined the IRS in 2021 after 7 years with the Department of Veterans Affairs Office of Inspector General. Krause was serving as tax collector's chief operating officer when she was promoted in February to acting commissioner. The IRS and Department of Homeland Security recently reached an agreement that gives DHS the ability to request tax return information for people under criminal investigation. The new relationship between the two agencies comes amid President Trump's crackdown on illegal immigration. The Federal Aviation Administration has replaced air traffic control managers at Ronald Reagan Washington National Airport. The FAA said in a statement it's brought in a new management team. The move comes after serious safety incidents at this D.C. area airport in recent months. January's mid-air collision between a U.S. Army Black Hawk helicopter and an American Airlines regional jet that killed 67 people. And a close call between U.S. Air Force jets and a Delta Airlines plane taking off on March 28th. The FAA says the head of the FAA Air Traffic Organization will step down early. Tim Arell had planned to retire at the end of this year, but will now depart the agency in the coming months. The FAA says it's a part of the voluntary deferred resignation program offered to Department of Transportation employees. Arell started as an air traffic controller back in 1989. President Trump has instructed the Justice Department to review state energy regulations. The president ordered his Attorney General Pam Bondi to identify any state laws, policies, or practices that may be unconstitutional or preempted by federal law. Trump has identified a number of domestic energy industries his administration says are facing unfair hurdles to their domestic growth. The president cited oil, natural gas, coal, hydropower, geothermal, biofuel, critical minerals, and nuclear energy resources. Trump's executive order yesterday read in part, quote, "Simply put, Americans are better off when the United States is energy dominant." The order cited, quote, "burdensome and ideologically motivated climate change or energy policies that threaten American energy dominance and our economic and national security." Are sky-high egg prices the result of a conspiracy? The largest egg producer in the country says it's cooperating with the Department of Justice investigation. The DOJ sent Calmain a civil investigative demand last month. The head of the department's antitrust division said it will prioritize enforcement against anti-competitive conduct in U.S. consumer markets. According to USA data, egg prices have declined in recent weeks from record highs. Nevertheless, wholesale prices are still up 60% from this time last year at $3 a dozen. Weaker demand and a lull in new cases of bird flu have helped cool prices. Still to come, the U.S. and Iran will soon have talks on a possible nuclear deal. Meanwhile, Israel's prime minister shares key details of his meeting with President Trump. Secretary of Defense Pete Hegseth sounds the alarm on China's presence in the Western Hemisphere. One major threat, influence over the vital Panama Canal. More on that after the break. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu was the first world leader to meet with President Trump since new tariffs went into effect. Here to talk more about this with us is NTD national security correspondent and former counterintelligence agent Jason Perry. Jason, good to see you. What are some of the major takeaways from their meeting?
Well, thanks for the question. Some people may have heard by now there are close to 70 countries that have already reached out to President Trump about these new tariffs. And with Israel being the first to meet with Trump at this time, it shows the close relationship Trump has with Israel. And it wasn't long before Netanyahu said Israel was going to eliminate the trade deficit with America, and also to get rid of trade barriers with the United States that Netanyahu said were put up unnecessarily. And afterwards, White House Press Secretary Caroline Levitt said Israel's proactive approach should serve as a model for the rest of the world.
Now, issues as well. Was there anything that really caught your attention there?
Well, Netanyahu raised concerns about Turkey, which has been in talks with the new Syrian government. And Netanyahu said that Turkey wants to establish military bases in Syria. And that poses, he said that poses a threat to Israel. Now, Turkey's foreign minister, Hakan Fidan, recently said that Turkey does not want confrontation with Israel in Syria. And he also said this. Let's have a look.
Syria doesn't belong to Turkey. Syria doesn't belong to Israel. We cannot talk on behalf of the Syrians. The Syrian security should be decided by the Syrians.
Now, after meeting with President Trump, Netanyahu reiterated that Israel is against Turkey establishing military bases in Syria. And he said if Israel needs help from the United States, they'll talk to Trump about it.
And in another development, Jason, the U.S. and Iran are said to have talks Saturday about a possible nuclear deal. Do you think Iran will agree to a deal?
Well, I definitely think it's possible that they'll reach a deal, especially with Iran actually coming to the negotiating table. But I'm not sure it was 100% their choice to participate in the talks, because President Trump recently said if they don't reach a nuclear deal, then the U.S. will bomb Iran. And just last week, the Pentagon said the U.S. had moved more warplanes to the Middle East. And that could be very well related to this Iran issue. Netanyahu also shared his thoughts on the nuclear deal with Iran. Let's hear what he had to say.
First of all, Iran. We agree that Iran will not have nuclear weapons. This can be done in an agreement, but only if this agreement is a Libya-style agreement, that we go in, blow up the facilities, dismantle all the equipment under American supervision and American execution. That is good.
Now, U.S. Special Envoy Steve Witkoff is set to meet with Iran's foreign minister Abbas Araghchi in Amman on Saturday. Now, Araghchi posted on X, which is actually banned in Iran, and he said the ball is in America's court. But on the other hand, Trump said if the talks aren't successful, then it's going to be a very bad day for Iran.
And with those words, thank you so much for this update.
Thanks, Steph.
And the Chinese regime is ramping up pressure on African officials. Chinese diplomats threatened to cancel an upcoming summit in China and called top officials in two African countries to pressure lawmakers to quit a group critical of China. African politicians and experts call it an escalation of Chinese diplomatic pressure. Beijing has worked to build deep ties in Africa through mining and infrastructure projects. The group Beijing doesn't like is the Inter-Parliamentary Alliance on China. It includes hundreds of lawmakers from 38 countries concerned about how democracies are approaching Beijing. The group has coordinated sanctions over rights abuses in Xinjiang and Hong Kong and rallied support for Taiwan. The Chinese regime's pressure has led to some African leaders to quit the group. Secretary of Defense Pete Hegseth today warned a regional security conference of China's presence in the Western Hemisphere. The defense secretary's remarks come one day after describing Beijing as a threat to the Panama Canal.
Beijing is investing and operating in this region for military advantage and unfair economic gain. We do not seek war with China. And war with China is certainly not inevitable. We do not seek it in any form. But together, we must prevent war by robustly and vigorously deterring China's threats in this hemisphere.
Hegseth called on the region's governments to work together to deter China. The defense secretary toured the Panama Canal with Panama's president yesterday. The two countries agreed to step up security coordination and suggested they may be negotiating a way back to pay back fees that the U.S. warships pay to pass through the canal. President Donald Trump has repeatedly argued that the U.S. is being overcharged to use the critical waterway. Still to come, German conservatives agree to a coalition deal with the center-left Social Democrats there. The new alliance aims to revive growth in Europe's largest economy, just as global trade dispute threatens recession. And a renowned chocolate factory in Naples unveils a giant Easter egg. The sweet behemoth weighs in at almost 800 pounds. Stephanie Cox, and this is World Watch. German conservatives agreed to a coalition deal with the center-left Social Democrats today. The new alliance aims to revive growth in Europe's largest economy just as a global trade dispute threatens recession. The deal caps weeks of haggling between incoming Chancellor Friedrich Merz and the Social Democrats after he topped elections in February. Merz fell well short of a majority, with the Nationalist Alternative for Germany party surging into second place. Pressure to reach a deal becomes more urgent following President Trump's sweeping tariffs. Social Democrats still must vote to ratify the coalition deal. Merz has called Trump an unreliable ally and has vowed to build up defense spending as Europe faces a hostile Russia. Check it out.
We have conducted the coalition negotiations in a situation of growing political tensions around the world, in a situation in which many forces from within and without are not working with us, but against us in Germany. The war in Ukraine continues unabated. The Russian aggressor Putin is showing no willingness to end the war and silence the weapons. And at the same time, the economic uncertainties are increasing enormously. Just this week, decisions by the American government have triggered new turbulence. We can observe the reactions in real time, so to speak.
Thousands of Greeks took to the streets today as the nation's largest trade unions called for a general strike to demand higher wages. The one-day strike halted trains across the country, left ferries docked at ports, and grounded flights while metro workers in Athens walked off the job. Greece's debt crisis between 2009 and 2018 resulted in rolling wage and pension cuts. In exchange, Athens received $290 billion in bailouts from the Eurozone and International Monetary Fund. The austerity measures hit public sector workers hard. Now they're on strike, demanding annual bonuses that were scrapped over the past decade. Eurostat data in January showed Greece's minimum salary in terms of purchasing power among the lowest in the European Union, behind Portugal and Lithuania. U.S. troops in Portland will be relocated as part of a broader military restructuring. That's according to Polish President Andrzej Duda, following reports of potential U.S. troop withdrawals from Eastern Europe. The U.S. military said on Monday that troops and equipment would be repositioned from Jasionka and southeast of Poland. It serves as a hub for delivering military aid to Ukraine. The troops will be moved to other parts of Poland. Duda said President Trump and Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth assured him there were no plans to reduce the American military presence in Poland. Now, NATO has conducted multinational exercises on the Black Sea near the Romanian city of Constanta on Tuesday. The exercises, dubbed Sea Shield 25, were designed to strengthen collaboration between naval, air, and ground forces. The drills included the defense of critical coastal infrastructure. Romania's navy is the least modernized of its military branches. The country has said it plans to raise defense spending to as much as 2.5% of economic output this year, from a little over 2.2% in 2024. The interim president said the figure could gradually reach 3% of GDP within 1 to 2 years. NATO Secretary General Mark Rutte met with Japanese Prime Minister Shigeru Ishiba in Tokyo today, where the two agreed to strengthen ties in a pivotal time for security and stability. Rutte told reporters in a joint press conference that in a more dangerous world, NATO and Japan stand strong to protect our values, our freedom, and our peace, unquote. He cited Russia's invasion of Ukraine, China's destabilizing activities in the Indo-Pacific, and North Korea's illegal weapon programs. Ishiba said that the deepening relationship between Japan and NATO indicates that the security of Europe, the Atlantic, and the Indo-Pacific are inseparable. Rutte also welcomed Japan's plan to invest 2% of its GDP in defense by 2027. South Korea's main opposition party head, Lee Jae-myung, said today he was stepping down as party leader. The move comes amid expectations the current populist frontrunner for the presidency in opinion polls would soon declare his run. South Korea will hold a presidential election on June 3rd. That follows former President Yoon Suk-yeol's impeachment being upheld.